Sherlock Holmes scoffed at the notion of the supernatural till a demon stole Watson's soul. Coming up next on this special edition of The Right Stuff. Edition of The Right Stuff. The Queen is here. I'm so excited to showcase to you Angels, Saints, and Sinners, The Conversion of Sherlock Holmes. What a unique take on a popular icon in our world today. No one out there, even if you haven't read Sherlock Holmes, knows about Sherlock Holmes, one of the most identifiable fictional characters of all time. People have made so many reiterations of him. We have Robert Downey Jr., we got Benedict Cumberbatch, we got Basil Rathbone. So many people play the very iconic pipe-smoking detective. But in this case, we have a unique spin on that with the book by William David Ellis called Angels, Saints, and Sinners, The Conversion of Sherlock Holmes. A number of people, when I posted this on Facebook and the like, were very drawn to it, like, oh my goodness, what a unique idea, you know, so they're very excited about it. So what I want to do, I want to encourage you to go ahead and pick up your copy of Angels, Saints, and Sinners, The Conversion of Sherlock Holmes today on Amazon.com or wherever books are sold. I'm so excited to tell you about this author and his other books that he also has out there, but I know you'll really be intrigued by this one. So go ahead and pick up your copy today. As always, I want you to prayerfully consider if this is a ministry that you want to support or can support. We just started taking donations, a couple of months ago via Patreon. So if the Lord leads you to prayerfully support this ministry through finances, you can go to our Patreon page, become a Quill member for $3 a month. And if you can't, no big deal. We definitely covet your prayers. We showcase Christian authors all over the world and have been doing that now for 7 years, and we couldn't do it without you. So prayerfully consider supporting the ministry. If you can't, like I said, no big deal. Just glad to have you along for the ride. As always, if you want to weigh in, you certainly can by calling in at 646-668-8485, then press 1 to be live on air, or hit me on Twitter at Parker J. Cole, hashtag right. We're going to go ahead, take a quick short break. We'll be right back after these messages. Stay tuned.
Don't go anywhere. More with Parker and her guest on the Right Stuff Radio Show. We'll be right back.
Are you a reader looking for more compelling Christian fiction? Maybe something a little more edgy or a bit more real? Are you tired of most Christian fiction shying away from the truth and settling for a rose-tinted view of the world and its issues? Or are you an author who has a compelling story to tell, but you're afraid it doesn't jive with today's brand of Christian or secular fiction? Are you tired of Christian publishers telling you that your content is too edgy? Or maybe you've tried submitting your content under the radar to secular publishers, only to be told your themes are a bit too religious? We invite you to take a look at the Crossover Alliance. We are an online publishing company that specializes in edgy Christian speculative fiction with Christian themes and real-world content. Our company is formed from authors and readers just like you who are breaking into the mainstream and Christian markets with this compelling genre. Head over to the www.thecrossoveralliance.com for all the details on who we are, what we do, and what we accept. Right now, if you sign up for our email newsletter, you'll receive a free digital copy of our first short story anthology. Check us out today and help us spread the word about the Crossover Alliance, where light shines brighter in the darkness.
If you are an author looking to gain visibility for your books, then authorshout.com is the place to go. We have a wide variety of affordable products and services to include a member zone that will help you get the word out about your books. Our team here at authorshout.com specializes in creating stunning digital products to include book banners, teaser videos, book trailers, book covers, and a whole lot more. So what are you waiting for? Stop by authorshout.com today and let our team connect you with a world of new readers.
Hi, and welcome back to the show. You're listening to this special edition of The Right Stuff. I am so excited to bring to you today William David Ellis and his book, The Conversion of Sherlock Holmes, or aptly, Angels, Saints, and Sinners. It's available on Amazon.com or wherever books are sold. Go ahead and pick up your copy today. It's a short four-story collection, but it reads much longer and very fast-paced. And when I got to the end, I was so disappointed because I didn't want it to end. It's a lovely take on Sherlock Holmes. I cannot wait to delve more into it. And so without further ado, I'm going to introduce my guest, co-host, and contributor today, William David Ellis. Will, how are you doing today?
I'm great. I'm really good. Good to hear from you. Sure is.
I'm excited to talk about the book because I definitely enjoyed it, and I love the take of Sherlock Holmes. Like I was saying in the introduction to the broadcast, he's a very recognizable character of fiction. Even if you've never read any of the books, never saw the movie, he has become an element of society just through osmosis, which is how brilliant the character is. And when author Conan Doyle, when he created this character, I don't think he would recognize just how impactful the character would be on popular culture. Not to mention that when I was reading up on author Doyle, he actually used some of the techniques mentioned in the book, like his deductive reasoning, and was able to acquit two men that had been wrongfully accused. So go figure that. You know, that's in my research there. I was like, wow. I wish I had deductive reasoning. All I can do is, you know, find my way in the dark and hit a wall. That's all I can do. But that's just being honest with you. I'll never be a detective, that's for sure. I always joke that I probably wouldn't be a very good murderer even because I'll probably leave the weapon.
Good to know.
I know, right? It's good to know that if you kill me, they'll find you within 5 minutes, Parker. So, yeah, that's how I feel about that. So it's exciting, though, to like talk with you and talk about the books. I definitely want to just get your take on things. But people need to know who you are. So go ahead and tell us who you are in your own words.
Well, I live in East Texas. And if I have any kind of a background, it would probably commonly call redneck. I'm educated. I have two master's degrees and a doctorate. So I'm an educated East Texan. And there are a lot of those, actually. I'm also, or was until recently, a farmer. I raised blackberries. We had like 700 or 800 plants, and we had a U-pick. And I'm also a beekeeper. And then on top of that, I'm a pastor. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's been a long and interesting journey. I'm married. We have, between the two of us, we have 6 children and only 4, was it last count, was 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and it'll be 5 soon, grandkids. Mm-hmm. I've been writing since I was in the 3rd grade, mm-hmm. and my first book was an entire page long, and it was mm-hmm. written on Big Chief tablet, and I had one of those pencils that were really thick, and you had to lay it on your shoulder to be able to write with it 2 hands.
Yes.
And it was a masterpiece of plagiarism. Because mm-hmm. I just seen the movie that had Adam West in it called Robinson Crusoe on Mars, and so my book was Robinson Crusoe on Venus, and my writing's gotten better mm-hmm. since then. I think last count I'd started 8 books and only finished 4, and mm-hmm. none of those were the way that I first started. So from what I've read of writers and talked with other writers, that's very common. You know, it takes a long time to master the craft. And if you're not mm-hmm. a reader, you're not going to be a very good writer.
Yeah.
So that's me.
Well, writers definitely should be readers because you don't know how to write and you don't know how to tell a story, what the flows of the story are. And I'm of the opinion that writers are born. But I was talking to a few guests before, and they said, well, writers can be bred as well. So I would love to get your thoughts. Are writers born, or are they bred?
Well, I don't think you can be one without being the other. just thinking about it.
Well, of course you have to be born. Of course you have to be alive. It often helps.
Yeah.
That definitely helps.
Read to my brother and I when we were little. And she didn't start off with, you know, Dr. Seuss, although she read Dr. Seuss. She was into Tarzan. And I don't know if you've ever read Edgar Rice Burroughs a lot, but he uses words that today I don't even know the meaning of, like multi-syllable. And I was being read that when I was in the first grade. And since then I've learned that sometimes large syllable words are things people hide behind. And if you can't say it in one syllable or two syllable word, then you don't know what you're talking about. But it took me a while to get to that point. And so I read 50 or 60 fiction novels a year, just devour them. Every night before I go to bed, I'm reading something. And if somebody were to find my Kindle and look at some of the stuff I read, they'd think, oh, my gosh. But it's not like it's nasty or erotic or anything like that. It's not. But they'd say, you know, this guy's reading about wizards, and he's reading about dragons, and he's writing about them. But they go, oh, my gosh. And, you know, in order to communicate to this generation, we've got to learn its language. And I'm acquainted with the idea that you don't learn what a counterfeit bill is by studying one. And I understand that. You know, you have to know the authentic. And I do. I mean, I've read the Bible like 40 times. And I've had degrees in biblical studies and things like that. So I know what I'm talking about. But I also know that when you're fishing for men and the hook is showing, you don't catch any fish. And so one of the things I try to do when I write is to not hide the gospel under a bushel, because, you know, those things have a tendency to catch on fire, but to frame it in such a way as the people are addicted to the idea of God being somebody they want to know before they realize that he is somebody they can know. And that's the heart. That's my heart right there. So,
amen.
Does that make
sense? It does make sense. It makes a lot of sense. And what I like that you said is they want to know him, and you can know him. Our Lord is quite personable, but people are used to seeing God as this distant figure, figurehead that lives on some sort of, you know, corporate mountain, I guess. So you have to take a number, and then you can see him. Well, you can access him via prayer right now, this instant, right now. You have an appointment with him right now, you know. And I think people need to understand how that is extremely important when it comes to these type of conversations. Because even in your book, Angels, Saints, and Sinners, The Conversion of Sherlock Holmes, available on Amazon.com or wherever books are sold, this is a question that's actually asked within the narrative. Okay, so that's asked in the narrative right here, you know, about, you know, how do you get close to God? And at first, Sherlock Holmes is quite skeptical. But then over time, as he has these experiences, he begins to understand that I have access to, I not only know who he is, I have access to him. And that can be a life changer for someone out there listening, is a fact. And I like the fact that you used Sherlock Holmes as our medium of exploration here. Because he, like I said, he's a very recognizable character. And I put a fun question on my Facebook, Will, and my question was, who portrayed the best Sherlock Holmes? And so I used the guy from 1937. I think his name is not Hannibal Lecter. Oh my gosh, A Science of the Lamb. It'd be a great genre, to, you know. You know, he will solve the case, or he'll take a bite out of it, right? You know, but Lewis Hector, Basil Rathbone, Benedict Cumberbatch, Robert Downey Jr., or someone else. And so my grandma thinks there is no other Sherlock Holmes but Basil Rathbone. There is no other.
Yeah.
So for my granny, that's it. Yep. There is no other. What do you think?
Right. Pardon?
I said, what do you think? Hello? Is it Basil Rathbone?
Well,
can you hear me?
He is more.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah. Can you hear me? You good?
Yeah.
Hello? Okay.
Yes, I can hear you.
He is truer to the original version. You know, he's got the accent, and he's not trying to impose 21st century culture on a 20th century being. I mean, the original Sherlock Holmes came out of the 1870s, 1890s mindset, and, you know, the ones that we have now, they're imposing a different culture on And so I don't really think it's true to the original intent of the author. Does that make sense?
It does. It does make sense.
Okay.
We were talking, there was some discussion going on about Benedict Cumberbatch and his take on Sherlock Holmes with the BBC series Sherlock. And I watched it. And I must say I do like the show, but that's not Sherlock Holmes.
Right.
And
exactly.
I almost wish it was just called Benedict Cumberbatch, and then he's his own character, and we don't have to compare him to the 20th century version of Sherlock Holmes. And I was telling someone,
right,
like the episode in Sherlock with the woman, you have to understand that it was not just about the case. It was also, in my opinion, an allegory of England and America. And what happened, because the woman was the only one who escaped, and she was American, and she escaped, and that's the allegory, you know. And, you know, Sherlock Holmes represents the foundation, and she, you know, she wrote all that. That's why he can never call her anything but the woman, you know. And she had a name, but he always, I'm sorry.
Yeah, Irene Adler, wasn't that her name?
Yeah, that was her name. And in Sherlock with Benedict Cumberbatch, they made her a dominatrix. And I said, are you kidding me? You know, like, are you kidding me? You know, all the permutations we could have made this woman, and we made her a dominatrix. Awesome. You know, you just kind of go like, gosh, you know. But like I said, I like the show, but it's not original to the source material. But I like Benedict Cumberbatch. He does a fine job acting-wise with it. Even Mycroft, his brother Mycroft, is really good in that show. So, yeah, but though there are Sherlock Holmes purists out there, and so there's these very lovely debates of, what'd you say?
I laughed. Yeah, when you used the word purist, but I thought, I'm a hypocrite when it comes to that, but I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, no, there are some purists out there who have very decided views of what Sherlock Holmes is and who best portray him. Those are always fun, you know, because you're like, you know, he's not real, right? And sometimes it's like, it's okay, it's not real, he's not going to come out the woodwork. So someone joked and said, I don't know if it was a millennial or a Gen Z, I don't know, said like, oh, don't you want to be like that detective Sherlock Holmes? I'm like, no, I don't, because he's not real. he's so permeated our culture, you know, we love him. I remember reading a circle and Doyle, Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, he was tired of him by that time because people were clamoring for more Sherlock Holmes. That's why he killed them. And I remember reading, the public was like, bring him back. We don't care how you do it. Bring him back. You know, he's not dead.
Right.
You know, they didn't care, you know. And it's fascinating just how we can be really attached to the immaterial and the fake. How much more than our loving Heavenly Father, who is knowable and personable, who takes active action into our lives today, and we can access him faster than we can pick up a book, you know. And I love how the Lord shows that to us every step of the way. But before we dig more into your book, Angels, Saints, and Sinners, The Conversion of Sherlock Holmes, once again, available on Amazon.com, I would love to get your ideas about how your writing process started. You mentioned when you introduced yourself that you have been writing since third grade, but let's go a little bit further. What does that journey look like? Tell us about it.
Well, that's a good question, and I know I've had a couple hours to think about it. It's like 100-yard dashes with year-long waits in between, and finally I've gotten to where I can run the marathon. I know that's a metaphor, but my early years, I would have spurts of writing. That's where I wrote those 8 different books or had ideas for them. And then I just sit them down and not do anything. And then suddenly, I guess it was 2018, maybe a little before that, I began to consistently write a story that turned into a novel, and then I'm starting on the 5th book since 2018, and Sherlock Holmes was just kind of actually thrown together in like 6 months time or less. And I'm actually writing some more stories about him, by the way. But anyway, so it's a maturing process, and it's also, there's so much at risk when you write that some people never ever attempt to publish because they're so afraid of rejection. And
you know, I know I'm going to be rejected anyway, and I just don't give a rat's rear end. I'm going to write it, and if people like it, they'll share it. And I was actually surprised when folks began to say, wow. And the greatest compliment a writer can have is when somebody who doesn't know him reads his or her stuff and goes, oh, my goodness, it kept me awake at night. What else have you got? I mean, that is the ultimate compliment to a writer. And so in a nutshell, that was my journey, is my journey.
And we are talking today to William David Ellis. He is the author of the book, Angels, Saints, and Sinners, The Conversion of Sherlock Holmes. It's available on Amazon.com or wherever books are sold. So make sure you go ahead and pick up your copy today. We're going to go ahead and take a quick short break. But if you want to weigh in on our conversation, you know you can. Simply call in at 646-668-8485. Then press that 1 to be live on air. Or hit me on Twitter at Parker J. Cole, hashtag right stuff with your questions or comments. We'll be right back after these messages.
Don't go anywhere. More with Parker and her guest on the Right Stuff Radio Show. We'll be right back.
How do fantasy and sci-fi help make us into better people? And how can Christians best glorify our Lord Jesus Christ as we enjoy these stories? Also, where can you find the best fantastical Christian novels? Yes, they do exist, and we know exactly where to find them.
From the creators of Lorehaven magazine and from biblical Christian storytellers around the world comes a new podcast for readers of amazing stories. We call it Fantastical Truth.
I'm E. Stephen Burnett.
And I'm Zachary Russell. Our mission is to find biblical truth in fantastic stories. We apply the wonders of these imaginary worlds to the real world our Creator has called us to serve.
Toward that chief end, we will find the best novels by Christian authors, fantasy, science fiction, and beyond. Together, we will explore these stories in light of the gospel, and we'll join these authors and other creative friends on this joyful journey to find the happiness and holiness of Jesus by exploring his gift of truthful imagination.
Please subscribe at lorehaven.com or on podcast players everywhere.
Join us in this eternal quest to seek and find fantastical truth.
The Speculative Fiction Cantina is your weekly hypodermic injection of science fiction, fantasy, horror, alternate history, and things weird and wonderful in the world of books and writers. You'll hear from writers who bend the rules and drive the narrative. We ask authors the hard questions. We do the show in our pajamas. Join S. Evan Townsend on this journey over the rainbow and through the looking glass. The Speculative Fiction Cantina on Rightstream Radio every Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern.
Hi, and welcome back to the show. You're listening to the special edition of The Right Stuff. The Queen is here. I'm talking to my guest, co-host, and contributor today, William David Ellis. He is the author of the book, Angels, Saints, and Sinners, The Conversion of Sherlock Holmes. It's available on Amazon.com or wherever books are sold. So make sure you go ahead and pick up your copy today. And David, once again, thank you so much for being with me on the show. We got a little bit behind the scenes of who you are. You're a pastor, well-educated, Texan, and just all those good stuff. And then you talk about your journey and why people need to be aware of pop culture and what kids are reading, not because you may not agree with it, quote unquote, per se, but you at least have to talk the language. And then we talked about how your journey began and what's that look like. And I talked a little bit about the book Sherlock Holmes, and I can't wait to delve into it because Sherlock Holmes, your iteration of it is so unique. And I thoroughly enjoyed this take on it. Plus, you really wrote true to the canon. And what I mean by that, like even the way the story is told, it's told as if it's canon, but it goes a different direction, obviously. And I like that that sense of authenticity there. But you also use creative license because, you know, he time travels. Go figure, you know. And I said, that was good. And first thing when he mentioned H.G. Wells, I said, yeah, H.G. Wells' Time Machine. That would totally do it. And I love how you mixed certain stories together, certain themes together. So it's a beautiful short story collection, and they're all intermixed and intertwined with each other. But it creates a beautiful tome that I think people will love. And it reads very quickly. It's a short book. It's not really long at all. You could read it probably an hour or two and have just a good experience. I know Peter Young's husband from Perspective by Peter, I know he definitely enjoyed it. But I could have shot him because he said he never read Sherlock Holmes. I said, I wanted to tell him, stop your life. Go pick up Sherlock Holmes and read it. Just stop your life. Tell your wife, you know, I can't be for like 3 days because I have to read Sherlock Holmes because Parker said so. But I wanted to tell you, you have to read it. And then he got his information from the movies and things. And I said, you can't get it from the movies. You have to get it from the book. The book's the one. It's the source material. Right. I mean, they wouldn't have the movies without the source material.
It's great. And he's Australian. Isn't he Australian?
Yeah, he's Australian from Melbourne.
That's even worse. A part of the British Empire, and he has not read Sherlock Holmes. Well, we're going to call repentance upon that man. I'm telling you.
I know, right? I got to let Peter know we're making fun of him right now. I'm going to hit him on Twitter while we're talking. But, you know, it's fun that he really enjoyed it. And that's why your book is so relatable, is that even if you haven't read Sherlock Holmes, you don't have to read, quote unquote, you don't have to read the canon. Order to enjoy it, because you're going to get the taste of Sherlock Holmes as the canon portrayed without maybe having that the heavy style of Sir Arthur Conan Doyle that he had. But that style is still evident. Now, was that something that you did deliberately? Was it just this is how the story flowed? Tell us a little bit about, you know, how important was it for you to at least stay true to the style of Sherlock Holmes?
Well, when you saturated yourself in the books and the stories, I think I've read everything about Sherlock Holmes at least twice. And after a while, and that word saturation is important because it also what enables other writers to write about anything in fiction. If you don't have an instinctual, I mean, it's got to be at that level, feel for fantasy or military science or alternate history or whatever you're writing, it's going to come across. And so, you know, I've read and not studied in minute detail like some poor people without a life. But, you know, I've read him to the point that, you know, I know what his apartment looks like. I know what his vices are. I know what makes him mad. I know what kind of tobacco he uses. I know that Watson's had two wives. I think they both got killed. Or at least one did, one didn't. And so when you understand at least the context, it sort of comes natural after that. It's not like you have to deliberately sit down there and plan. And it's also agonizing because you're thinking, did I capture the style? Did I capture the voice? And to be honest with you, I didn't know whether I had or not. And some people think I have not. Mm-hmm. And by the way, let me go ahead and make this disclaimer. There are a lot of additional Sherlock Holmes material out there. Arthur Conan Doyle did not write. And since I think he became public domain, 2004 maybe. Since that time, there've been probably 100 different fiction books about him. Maybe not that many, but and so he's, and even my premise, you know, his conversion to believing in the supernatural is not accurate according to all the rest of things, because there's got Sherlock Holmes meets Dracula. Sherlock Holmes meets, you know, it's already out there.
Mm-hmm.
And Lucy Jenkins has got a lot of stuff about him too. So I'm not going to, you know, I don't want to in any form or fashion claim that, you know, I came up with this idea. It wasn't original at all. I mean, but for me, it was a great catchy title. And even the word conversion for a Christian, you know, we're steeped in our own culture and we immediately think, well, that's only one type of conversion. Well, when you change your mind that drastically about something, it's a form of conversion.
Yeah.
You're opening yourself up to an idea that you were not previously. And you know, there's even a scale of evangelism. It's called the Engel scale of evangelism, where somebody's not even aware that God is. And then gradually, you know, this has been studied and all kind of things have been written about it, but they become aware that he is. They become aware of his nature, as in he is. He cares. They become aware of their nature, And there's a process that people go through before they cross that line, the threshold moment where Christ is conceived in their heart and the power of the Holy Spirit. And so he's not there yet in this book. I'm actually going to expand that probably within the next month because people say it's too short. And so this last week, even today, I was in the process of writing more short stories that I'm going to add to it. So if people want to hold off, that's fine. I'm sorry, I don't mean to do that. But people said, more. And I'm thinking, well, okay, I'll add some more to this book, and then I'll write an entirely different version or more, a different book. But I'm trying to give people value, you know? So, anyway.
Well, you know what? I think it's appropriate because it's a short read. And the thing about Sherlock Holmes, they were put in the paper. They were distributing the paper over, I think, a weekly basis. And so people were reading him for years. And, you know, imagine when he when he got killed in the final problem. They were like, excuse me, you know, he's part of our life, you know. And I was laughing, too, because, like, when I got to the end of the book, I was so like, ugh. I mean, my heart stopped. Like, it's over. It can't be over. And so go back. And I love the just the unique take on a lot of the stories about adding that supernatural element in there, adding those thoughts, adding, you know, Sherlock Holmes really delving into this. And some people, I know of some people who have become believers, they often do talk about how it wasn't an emotional thing when they came to Christ or when they accepted Christ, depending on who you're talking to. It wasn't an emotional thing as much as it was a statement of faith, meaning that I believe that Jesus Christ is the Son of God. It wasn't like an emotional thing. It was more so like, I've studied this, I have come to that conclusion. And I think that works for Sherlock Holmes. That works for him because he would, if we're going to, you know, mind you, we've already taken the character out of its canon. So we're using Sherlock Holmes.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, it would be something he would use as a tool.
No, I was just thinking about in the original story in this particular work of mine called Reflections, there is that moment when that portal opens and he experiences the Shekinah glory. You know what? You're sitting in there in that that priest, that godly priest office, and the priest pulls back the veil for a moment, and he experiences that. I mean, that will change you, you know. And in there, you see something like, you know, and actually that's going to be an excerpt that you asked me to read. That, you know, I've experienced it now, and so.
Yeah,
that glory, real. That manifest glory is amazing. It's phenomenal, and it's very real.
Interesting enough, too, like somebody who may be a Sherlock Holmes purist may say, well, this isn't Sherlock Holmes. How dare you write this, David? And you go, you know what? Calm down. Okay. But I was actually thinking, too, in that scene, of course, you cannot experience the presence of God and ever be the same. There's no way possible you can experience the presence of God and be the same. There's no way. Even if you turn your back, it's because you turned your back on it, not because it didn't affect you. You know what I'm saying? And I liked how that part in the story that you're going to be reading an excerpt from, I like that part where the priest says, that was just a crack in the door. The door wasn't even opened, you know, and I was recently at a panel discussion about heaven. And I said, we have to have new bodies because we won't be able in this present form when we just get like touches, just burst. It will burst almost because we can't contain it because these bodies are full of sin and they can't even handle the glory. That's why he said that's why the corruptible was put on incorruption and its mortality was on immortality. He's going to give us new bodies that's going to be able to handle that type of glory. This sends chills down your spine when you think about it. Or even when we have experiences, I want you to talk about this too, David, when we have experiences with the supernatural, like spiritual warfare. In the very first story, they are prayer walking through England. And I love that depiction in that story. Let's talk about that real quickly. We're going to delve into the story right now of Angels, Saints, and Sinners, the conversion of Sherlock Holmes, available on Amazon right now. Let's delve into it. Sherlock Holmes begins with a case, a very interesting case. And let's go ahead and start with the first story. Tell us what that case is about.
Well, I used the idea everybody's familiar with of Jack the Ripper. And what happens is John Watson, Dr. Watson, is accused of being that murderer because they find the tools of the trade, the scalpels and the bloody knives and things, at the foot of his bed. And Lestrade, I think he's called, is the detective from Sherlock Holmes, and he comes up the stairway to Sherlock Holmes and Watson's apartment, and he knocks on the door, and he arrests Watson. And then Watson escapes from the jail, and he finds a French detective, who, by the way, was actually a real person. He was the one that, before fingerprints came along, was the one that was responsible for measuring a person's ear and their finger and certain portions of the body that never change, and he had files. And so he was a real guy. Anyway, so Watson connects with him, and he has been studying this killer. And he says this is not the first place he's shown up. He's been in other places. And he said he's actually been there for thousands of years. And he tells Holmes, and Holmes just has a hard time with it, that it's a demon, and he possesses different people, causes them to do things. And so that leads them to this place of prayer. And I don't know. I know people have different ideas about Catholics and things like that, but in my personal experience, the first time I ever walked into a prayer room, it was the prayer room of a Catholic monk whose entire life was devoted to prayer. And I walked in the door, and I was amazed because it was in the walls. You probably heard that quote from what was that movie? The Prayer Warrior, was that it? With the black lady she would pray all the time. This old lady, and
that's War Room. You talk War Room.
Yeah. So I felt that. I've experienced that personally, and so. You know, that residue of the glory of the Lord. Anyway, so they come, the French detective Boutillion and Holmes and Watson, they come to this place, and so that Holmes can get a word from the Lord. And this is oversimplification, very much so. But and so that old priest, he cracks open for just a moment the veil, and they experience that glory. And he says, we are going to use this glory to push the darkness into a place in London where we can deal with it. And so they have all these godly people surround London and start walking toward the center of it. And they're blowing shofars and they're praying, and horses start going crazy, dogs bark. And there's a scene that I really love. I guess it's okay to say you love something you wrote, but it's these two flower ladies. Ladies who sell flowers, these ugly women, one of them smells a beautiful fragrance, and the other smells garbage. Mm-hmm. And that's actually biblical. See, we are to God the aroma of Christ. To those that are perishing, we smell like death. But to those that are being saved with the fragrance of life. And so I try to bring in those images and illustrate those passages, those biblical truths, not by just quoting a verse, but by writing it. So that people can say, oh, that's what. And so finally, they meet in the center of the park. And I try to use actual historical places. And I can't remember what park that was, but it's a real place. And this guy, this old Englishman, is sitting on a park bench. He's got his bowler. He's got his cane. He's dressed in black and his white beard. And he's angry, very dignified. And he mocks them. And he says, you know, you've won the day for now. But he says, I will return and I will bleed England dry in the first generation. And in the second, I will bleed it dry again. And he's talking about World War I and World War II. And he said, and then we'll destroy it in the Holocaust. And what will your God do then? And somebody answers him and says, you know, in this life, we have trial and we fail and we are twisted. But what does a child do when his father is there? He crawls up into his lap and he reigns and he rules. And he said, sir, you know, you may come back, but I want you to know our Father will never leave. And so whatever we go through, he's going to be there. And it's bad when you can't quote your own writing, but I messed that up. But anyway, it's very close to that, and it's in the first part of that book, Reflections. I think it's one of the better of the four stories.
Well, so, it's a very strong beginning. It's a very strong beginning. And the reason why is because I think it's a multifaceted reason. Because I know the Lord led you in this path too. And if you're going to be talking to if someone who picks up this book, and I hope it's a non-believer who picks up this book, and they're highly skeptical of the premise, but the premise, again, is brilliant. The fact that they would be asking these questions because you started from the place of skepticism. And a lot of people are skeptical. But like Holmes says, you know, I've experienced it. And there's a line I highlighted in the book. Let me see if I can find it. I highlighted it, and it says, arguments are lost to experiences. And I thought that was extremely profound because it says here, arguments are lost to experience, Holmes smiled. I am not sure what I just experienced, but I am sure I experienced it. And that's the thing. You know, you can say, well, there's no way possible that you experience the joy of God. You're not in this body. Okay, first of all, you're not wearing this hair. You're not wearing these hips. And you're not wearing this weight. Okay, yeah. I am. So having that's said right. all that, you can't, your argument flails in the experience. And that's why some of, not to get too bogged down in this, but in some of the nominations, particularly charismatic, they're really good at talking about the intimate connection with God, you know, having that experience right. with the supernatural, having that experience with God, feeling that. I'm not talking about the charlatans. I'm talking about real people understanding the element of the spiritual realm. And so I used to be kind of skeptical, not skeptical, but I was raised Baptist. I won't lie. And so, you know, charismatic, like, whoa, what's wrong with these people? You know, what's going on with them? They're doing weird things. And so, so I understand that. And I think people who have that charismatic background, you know, in the wonderful time I've been hosting this show, they do tend to have that experimental, experience-based writing, you know, that no matter what people say, you can't knock what I experience. And I experience his healing. I experience his joy. I experience his peace. And nothing you can say could take away that experience. So I actually like that part. When we get back, I'm actually going to have David read a part that I really that we're talking about that's a very profound part of the story that I know our listeners are going to enjoy. And guess what? You can still call in at 685. We'll be right back after these messages.
Don't go anywhere. More with Parker and her guest on the Right Stuff Radio Show. We'll be right back.
God gives humans the gift of making amazing stories to glorify Him. At SpeculativeFaith.com, our ministry is to help fans explore fantasy, science fiction, supernatural stories, and beyond from an intentional and biblical Christian perspective. We share daily articles and have extensive archives tackling hot topics like end times beliefs, the art of writing, creative excellence in the Christian subcultures, discernment, sex, magic, Harry Potter, and space aliens and the Bible. If you are a parent or anyone else with a discriminating palate, our reviewers explore fantastical novels, movies, television, and games in light of God's beauty, goodness, and truth. Want to find Christian stories? The SpecFaith Library lists every fantastical novel we can find from a Christian author. It's all part of our mission to discern, engage, and enjoy fantastical human creativity in honor of our Creator, Jesus Christ. SpeculativeFaith.com, exploring fantastical stories for God's glory.
Hi, and welcome back to the show. You're listening to a special edition of The Right Stuff. The Queen is here, and we are talking today to William David Ellis. He is the author of the book, Angels, Saints, and Sinners, The Conversion of Sherlock Holmes, available on Amazon.com or wherever books are sold. Make sure you go ahead and pick up your copy of this wonderful take of the beloved detective today. And David, once again, thank you so much for being with us on the show. Really enjoying our conversation as we talk about this iconic figure in fiction. And we also talk about prayer. We talk about power. Now, what I want you to do is read the excerpt that I particularly enjoyed to our listeners. So I'm going to go ahead and mute myself and give you that opportunity.
Okay, will do.
Are you ready? Here we go. Now, this is the context. They're in a room in sort of a monastery, and Holmes has been very skeptical. And the pastor said to him, you know, you've got to herd this beast. You've got to move it. You've got to, you know, move it into a certain place. And this time begins. You must set a trap for your adversary, Mr. Holmes. You know what he's after and what he wants. Create a stage. He will walk upon it. Holmes sat back in the overstuffed chair and lit his pipe. His face wore the look of intense thought as he gazed inward, suddenly oblivious to all but the idea that had been cast before him. There's not much supernatural to that idea, Watson volunteered. That depends on your idea of the supernatural, Dr. Watson. If you see it only as the spectacular or the magical, you'll miss the subtleness that camouflages most of it. Watson looked puzzled, and Monsignor Henry continued. The Lord doesn't often overwhelm. He desires to be sought and speaks to those who want to hear enough to listen. When he does overwhelm, it's a dangerous thing, for it precludes an awesome responsibility. But even then, the great revelations are usually for those who have already been listening. I see, Holmes answered quietly, surprised. Watson had assumed he was lost in thought and not paying any attention to the priest. Monsignor Henry looked steadily at Holmes and said, Perhaps you do, Mr. Holmes. Perhaps you do. Detective Botillon interrupted. But how do you set a trap for a spirit? He could be listening in at any moment or have a network that spies on his hunters. How do we trap an entity like that? He isn't here now, Detective Botillon. And even if he were, he'd be blind and deaf in this atmosphere. The darkness cannot endure the light. And right now we are surrounded by light. At that moment, scales fell from the eyes of the seated men. The world went from being a dull tarangitype to a fantastically painted portrait of color. The air in the room became heavy and condensed. Watson cried out, I can hardly breathe. His words were not in panic, but in wonder. Botillon's eyes grew wide and tears flowed from them. Holmes' mouth dropped open, and a look of supreme satisfaction formed upon his features. The only person not totally overcome was Monsignor Henry. He obviously enjoyed the experience, but his face showed a concern, seemingly out of place. Slowly, the light faded, and the common, dreary sieve of life continued its dark filter. Mon Dieu, and my Lord, gasped Detective Botillon. Thank you, thank you. He continued at a loss for words. Monsignor Henry answered the unspoken question. That was a door, gentlemen, and it opened only a crack. Had it opened any more, we would have died and walked through it, passing from this life into the next. Impressive, Holmes whispered passionately, which took Watson by surprise. Arguments are lost to experiences, Holmes smiled. I'm not sure what I just experienced, but I'm absolutely sure I experienced it. And that is the excerpt from the book, The First Story. Are you there, Parker? Hello?
I sure am. I had myself. Go figure. but that was a wonderful excerpt. And I really, when I was reading it today, I was really immersed in that scene. And I got to thinking just about experiencing the presence of God, and it would overwhelm you. And I thought about Moses, how Moses asked the Lord, he wanted to see him. And the Lord said, you can't see me or you die. You can't see his face and live because he's holy and we're sin. You know, what are you saying?
I said, what a way to go.
Yeah. you know, if we got to go, right. But the Lord let him see just the back
Absolutely.
Of him. He let him see just the back of him. And just the back of him overwhelmed Moses and he glowed. And the Israelites were like, man, you got to go. You're freaking me out, man. You got to go. So they had to get I think they covered this. I may be mixing up two stories right now, but I think they covered him with a veil.
No.
But
you're good.
Oh, yeah. And so they covered him with a veil. And that's just the hindquarters, of God. And that's why having that experience, that's why Holmes in this story, you know, he said, I can't argue that away. You know, I can't argue it away.
That's right.
There's possible. And it actually makes you sad a little bit, especially the part where it says slowly the light faded and the common jury sieve of life continued to stark filter. And it's like you experience the Lord and then you're like, oh man, I got to come back. You know, I have to come back to this.
Yeah.
And you see it in a whole different light. So that's why I liked about that particular excerpt was that here you have Holmes in the mouth and the belly of his skepticism, and then that happens. But one thing about Holmes in this particular part is that he has an open ear. You know, even though he's skeptical, his ear is open. And for some people who are skeptical, they are open somewhat to what you're saying. There are some people who are skeptical because they choose to be. But there are some people who are skeptical, but they're like, you know what, I will at least listen to what you have to say. I will weigh it and find it. And I think, and I always say this, that God stands up to scrutiny quite often.
Oh, yeah. Yes, he does. I mean, Thomas did that, and he said, touch me.
Mm-hmm.
Touch me.
Yep.
And I mean, he was not afraid of challenge. He wasn't afraid of somebody honest who was saying, I don't understand, help me. That's a prayer I think that will always be answered. And while I'm talking about this, I've got more than one book. And I want to push this idea a little bit because in my other series, the same ideas are conveyed. It's just not look with the dominant figure of Sherlock Holmes. You know, the same ideas, the same theme of skepticism and also of, like, for instance, I've written a fantasy novels, a whole series. And I don't know if you know it or not, but there are dragons in Scripture. There's a fire-breathing dragon,
mm-hmm.
and it's found in Job. All right? And
mm-hmm.
Job talks about Leviathan breathing fire. I mean, where the heck? So, fair game. Anyway, I pitched that, and I know you want to talk about Sherlock Holmes, I'll hush. Go ahead.
No, I was the next question after we talked about it was tell about your other books, because I know you have a fantasy series. And we were originally going to talk about that, just for our listeners, you know, to know what goes on behind the scenes here. We were going to talk about that. And then he quietly released this. I was like, oh my gosh, it looks great, you know. And so I said, I wanted to showcase Sherlock Holmes as well, because you can always come back and we can do the fantasy series. That's no problem there.
Right.
But I was really intrigued. Yeah, I was really intrigued by the Sherlock Holmes angle, and I thought it was unique enough. And like I said, people got to chatting and talking about it on our Facebook there, and it was fun because it got people talking, like the conversion of Sherlock Holmes. What? And then there are people saying, well, he wasn't scientific. He had deductive reasoning. And it's just wonderful to have that discussion, you know. And so and I was really intrigued by the entire premise of it. And the thing about this, too, we didn't really touch on it because it's not that important, was that, you know, Sherlock Holmes and Watson are like the quintessential romance, you know, like brotherly love they have for each other over the course that they work together. And there's nothing like in the canon where Sherlock thought Watson had died because Watson had got injured or something. And Watson, when he saw the look on Sherlock Holmes' face, he's like he, I think I'm going by memory, so you know what that is. But I was like, he was like, are you okay? And what did Watson say? Watson said, I could have died. Like when he saw that look on Sherlock Holmes' face, like, are you okay? And he realized how much he actually meant to Sherlock Holmes. I even think Sherlock Holmes was surprised at how much Watson meant to him, you know, and that eternal dynamic of bromance, you know, not romance, but bromance, you know, it's manly affection for each other, like David and Jonathan, Paul and Barnabas, before they got into it, you know, stuff like that. So I like that aspect, and just, and it's a, it's a common theme that we see used in a lot of different shows. And you're going to laugh when I say this, Dave, but I'm thinking about Pinky and the Brain even. You know, like Pinky and the Brain.
Oh, my God.
I don't know if you remember that cartoon back in the day.
The world.
They have a...
Yeah, they are.
Yeah, they had a bromance there. I was trying to find a picture of the Brain dressed as Sherlock Holmes, and I found it. I didn't get a chance to share it, but... yeah, but that dynamic there is always so classic. And you always have the brilliant one, but the brilliant one isn't brilliant unless he's viewed through the lens of those of us who are, quote-unquote, not brilliant. And the reason why is because the brilliant one would not recognize their own brilliance without someone rooting for them, that support, you know. Because when we meet Sherlock Holmes, he's known as a case person, but only people know him as in one light. And then Watson peels back this veil of who he is. And so it'll be interesting as you see more volumes of this of Sherlock Holmes in this permutation that you have of him to see how Watson begins to view his friend as it changes.
Yeah, and I've done something that I don't know if anybody else has already done, because I haven't read everything that everybody in the public domain has now written, but I'm bringing in a couple more sidekicks, and that's in the last short story in the first volume, and this guy's name is Francis Allparts, and I don't know if you caught the name or
of
if you even
I
read
did.
That.
Of course I did.
Huh? Did you read that
of
one?
Course I did. I read them all.
All right, and you know, there's a reason he's named Allparts, and I'm not going to be a spoiler. Mm-hmm. You're going to have to read that. But
no, don't spoil
it.
Wife... It's too good.
Okay,
it's
I'm not.
Good.
Okay, mm-hmm. Okay. So, but yeah, Watson's place is interesting in this, and I mean, I just got started on there, so I'm thinking, okay, there're going to be more volumes. I'm glad to know that you just told me, but there will be. But you know what? It's hard. And if you ever want to pray for me, pray that I continue to capture the voice. And I come up with stories that can intrigue people. And also, what I really want to do is them to say something like, oh, I wish God was like that. And then all of a sudden have a revelation that he is.
Mm-hmm.
He really is. That's my heart. That's what I want to do.
You know, we are at the top of the hour here, so we are close to the end of our show here, and I want people to have an opportunity to connect with you online, so go ahead
okay.
and share your social media outlets.
Well, I've got basically I just have a Facebook page, a William David Ellis author, and they can find my other books there, and that's all I've got. I'm a boomer. I don't think that's a bad word. It just describes that I'm not as literate as somebody in younger generations with computers. And I mean, I thought Twitter was something a bird did. And so I'm beginning to find out there's Twitter. And birds tweet. So, and I'm thinking, what? Why would somebody just call me? But, anyway, that's the only social media outlet I've got so far is my Facebook page, my author Facebook page. And you can find out a lot about me there.
Oh, gosh. Still on.
Yeah.
Are you thinking, like, are people getting birds? Do we have to decipher their calls now?
What's
a long tweet. Why are
you
tweeting? What does that mean?
Yeah, I don't know. So.
Or is that Sylvester's arch enemy, Tweety Bird?
Yes.
You know?
Yeah. I thought Tweety Bird twittered. I mean, sorry.
Oh, I'm sorry. My face is hot now. Oh, gosh. Thank you so much, David. In the last moments we have left, I always encourage our guests to those aspiring authors out there, because there are so many people who say, I want to write, but don't do it. So I want you to encourage them to pick up the pen and write stuff.
All right. One thing is you have to deal with rejection, and it depends on your audience. And somebody once told me one time, write for the king.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't have to be perfect, because he's also your dad. And write something because, you see, he gave you the gift and he'd like to see you use it. And you say, well, I don't have a gift. Well, that's because you need to sharpen it. So sharpen that gift and just begin to write because you want to please him. The most exciting times of my life is when I'm speaking for God or writing for God. And he can give me a story about dragons. There's a place in my other books where one of my characters actually dances with the North Star. And the North Star is a theophany. He is God.
Mm-hmm.
And not Odin or anything stupid like that. He is real, the real deal. He is the Lord God Almighty. And he dances with a young woman. And as a father with a daughter. And so, you know, you can write those things. Start with little things, but write. I journal. And one of the things I also do when I'm writing is I write
out of prayer. I said, "Dear Lord, this is the way I'm feeling today, and it ain't good." And then I wait, and I say, "What would he say to me if he were texting me back?" And sometimes I write that out, and I'm amazed at what comes. Now, am I saying that's the voice of the Lord? Nah, it may just be me. But, you know, if it's what he would have said, then it's what he did say.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot there. Sure is. Did that help?
It certainly does, and I hope those listening are inspired by what David said today. And David, once again, thank you, thank you. Thank you so much for being with us on the show, and we'll talk offline so I can definitely have you on the show to talk about your fantasy series, because I know I have a lot of listeners who love fantasy. And so we'll definitely have you back on the show real soon. So thank you for joining us today.
My pleasure, man.
And we were talking today to William David Ellis. He is the author of the book, Angels, Saints, and Sinners, The Conversion of Sherlock Holmes. You are going to love this tome. I enjoyed all four stories. They are all interconnected, so they're intra-universe, but they're very entertaining, very thought-provoking, particularly the last one that he hinted at called Francis Allparts. And I think you're going to love when you realize who that person is. You're going to adore it like I did. And I love this story, love how it starts and how Sherlock Holmes changes. You know, you may have a popular character of fiction that you adore. It may be Sherlock Holmes, it could be an anime character, it could be whatever it is. But if God has given you that interesting idea to turn it and flip it and use that particular character for his glory, why aren't you picking up the pen? What's holding you back? Are you worried that people are going to make fun of you? They probably will. Are you worried that it won't be good enough? It'll probably be better than what you think. Are you worried that people won't buy it? But there is a reader out there waiting for your story. Why won't you go ahead? Pick up. Thank you so much for joining me for this special edition of The Right Stuff. I'm the Queen, Parker J. Cole, and you have a wonderful, absolutely glorious, blessed day. Thank you.